The Building of Stonehenge. Now, we looked at the history, what was going on, when it was put together. Now we need to do a little bit on the construction part of it. Now, we know that for the most part, the big stones, the Sarsen stones, came from Marlborough Downs. These stones are heavier, too heavy to be transported by water, and so they had to be dragged overland using either massive sledges or sledges with rollers. You know, take the log, put it on in front, roll it, pick it up, move it around. The ropes that they would have used could have been made out of leather, could have been made out of cow hair. Obviously, they could have been made from vegetable matter, from the various grasses, because there are any number of examples where that takes place. And I'm going to refer to Easter Island. Thor Heyerdahl's expedition showed the natives moving and setting up statues without any metal tools of any kind. They used the local stone, which was the same material that the Moai or the Easter Island statues were made out of. And that's exactly what we have here. So on Easter Island, they put a rope around it and then began pulling on it. The villagers used the local reeds and made the rope. The same thing could have happened at Stonehenge. Now the route from Marlborough Downs to Stonehenge, has slopes, but most of the up and down slopes are pretty easy. But there is one. It's called Red Horn Hill. It's on the southern edge of the Vale de Pewsey, and it is a very steep gradient. Now to pull the heaviest stone, which would weigh 50 tons, up this hill would have required approximately 500 men, with an extra 100 at least to lay the rollers in front of the sledge and to keep it from wandering sideways. Modern studies suggest that even if all 600 men had been continuously employed over the complete route, the task would have taken approximately a year to complete. So we bring the stone in. Now we need to set it in place. We also need to work it. The Stonehenge uprights and lintels were dressed by shaping them by pounding their surfaces with heavy Sarsen hammers. These are hammer stones, so they're going to be rounded for the most part or rectangular. They used them as small as the size of a tennis ball and as large as a soccer ball, which if you read accounts from England, they're going to say football size. They mean soccer ball size, which is time-consuming and tedious, but is the same material that the Sarsen stone itself is made out of. And then once they're done, a lot of this material then can be used to pack the stones around the bases of the uprights after they're placed in the hole. Now, the hollow mortises and the lintels were made the same way. The tops of the stones must have been dressed level, leaving the tenons projecting. Only after the uprights had been raised and given time to settle in the chalk, then they would lift the lintels up and put them in the place. So we've dragged it into position. We've dressed the stones. You can see that on all of the Sarsen stones, and even on some of the blue stones where the working of the stone was done. Now we have to set it upright. Well, we're fully aware how the Egyptians did obelisks. They're much taller, but a little smaller and a little squarer. They have a much deeper hole. One of the issues you have with the Sarsen stones is that the hole is not that deep, which is why many of them fell over the centuries. We'll talk about reconstructing them at another time. The method probably used to erect the stones goes something like this. A foundation pit was dug in the chalk with one side vertical and the opposite one of the form of the sloping ramp. A row of wooden stakes was driven into the vertical side to stop the chalk from being crushed down by the toe of the stone as it was raised. The stone, base forward, was then moved on rollers towards the ramp until its toe was over the hole and its center of gravity was just behind the leading roller. The outer end was then levered up, dipping the base into the hole until the stone overbalanced at the last moment and came to rest in a leaning position. Then, with levers supported by timber packing, it was raised a few inches at a time and held in place by struts when the packing had been rebuilt closer to the stone. Finally, it would have been pulled upright by gangs of men hauling on the ropes. To raise a stone of the outer circle of Sarsens would have needed about 200 men. Well, we've had 600 rolling it. 200's not that many. To help in adjusting the stones to a vertical position, their bases were actually dressed to a blunt point on which the mass could more easily pivot. When the final adjustment had been made, the hole around the base was rapidly packed with stones, including discarded hammer stones, and then with chalk rammed hard in the position. Now, they probably used this same method to raise the lintels. The first lintel was positioned on the ground close and parallel to the base of the upright, and each end alternately lifted with levers and supported on a temporary packing of square timber. Then a crib of crisscross timbers is built around the lintel and uprights, and the deck over with stout planks just beneath the underside of the lintel. Now the weight of the stone is transferred with levers from the old packing resting on the ground to the new one on the deck. Thereafter, the whole process is repeated in stages, the lintel being raised about 2 feet in each stage. Finally, when the uppermost deck is level with the tops of the uprights, the lintel is levered sideways to fit over the projecting tenons. And then once in place, the crib that they were using is then dismantled for reuse. Lifting in this way has been used by modern engineers even today in places where you could not get a machine in to do that. It just takes time. A lot of times we want something done very, very, very quickly. But if you have extra people, you're going to have times of the year when you're not farming. So you're going to have extra people that you bring them in to do this sort of work. And the lintels are also then, in some cases, on the Sarsen circle, they're horizontally tongue and groove on top of it. So it's not just mortise and tenon. This is the way they put the Easter Island statues up. And you probably had this done in many other places. It just requires time and manpower to put those types of things in the position. So that's a standard operating procedure for putting the Sarsen stones in the position, putting them in the place, putting the lintels on top of them. Now the next two shows is going to be the history of what happened to Stonehenge after it stopped being used. First one is going to go up through until we get to about the 1800s. And then the second one will be what's been going on in modern times. Because you'll be surprised how odd the excavations and studies of Stonehenge have been. Now, the sources for this: Stonehenge by Bishop, Stonehenge and Neighboring Monuments by Atkins, Stonehenge of Kings by Crampton, Stonehenge Decoded by Hawkins, and Beyond Stonehenge by Hawkins as well. In addition, If Stones Could Speak, The Unlocking of the Secrets of Stonehenge by Aronson and Pearson, Stonehenge Complete by Chippendale, Stonehenge, A Biography of a Landscape by Darvill. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.